Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
With great power comes great responsibility. I mean, am I right or am I right?
Yeah.
There's no other opener. There's no other quote that defines a character, a trilogy, as concise as that line.
Mm-hmm. They didn't mention it in the third one, though.
Did they not have one drop at all?
I don't think so.
Well,
but
we see Uncle Ben in the new revelation that someone else actually killed him.
I've never seen this movie before.
Wild.
I know.
We need to get this out of the way right away.
Any movies in
this
trilogy.
Hasn't seen any of the original Spider-Man 3s. Well, 1, 2, or 3.
Or 3. Instead, like, I started watching these for the first time like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. My mind is blown right now.
I know. It was transcendent finding this out because, I mean, like, these are the films that, these are like the urtext to like my understanding of superheroes, like these three movies, and like specifically like Spider-Man 2, I feel like defines like superhero films, you know, to come. But when Brooke revealed this, I was like,
yeah,
oh my God. It was like one of those things where like, do you just watch Spider-Man 3 without any knowledge of the other ones? But I feel like it's so essential to understand this movie. Without, it would be just insane watching this being like, okay, so who's this new goblin guy and why is he on like a snowboard?
And why is it James Franco?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just so many questions happening. I mean, there are so many questions about this movie in general, but
I wanted to do my research properly. I knew that I would need like the whole trilogy backstory to really grasp what this is. And I feel like watching them back to back was wild because it's from 2003 to 2007. And I feel like you really see those 6 years evolving screen with the fashion and just like the tone. And
what do you mean the fashion? I think it's great all around.
So
absolutely no flaws.
Many low rise
no
jeans. I never want to see Kirsten Dunst is midriff ever again. It's so bad.
It is cool to see. I feel like the graphics in 2 hold up pretty well, but then there, I feel like, is a significant difference to 3 where you can really see just
shitty.
Like a big step. Yeah,
I think it's because that's probably when they stopped doing like the practical augmented and switched to like pure CGI, but it's like still shitty CGI
all of Alfred
at that
Molina's
point.
Like arms are practical. Actually practical. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm very glad to have some other Spidey fans on today
who have actually seen the movie before.
Help Jordan like properly convey what this movie means to him. So yes, today, if you haven't guessed yet, we are joined by Kira Coffer and Adam Sidorius from the Zillennial Canon. Hello guys. How are you? Glad to have you here.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Yes, so excited to be talking one of the most deeply formative films of my lifetime, actually.
Yes, just 3 or the trilogy as a whole?
Both, but 3 is pretty significant, like in my memory and just like youth, honestly. Yeah.
Can I just ask why? Can we just dive right
let's
in?
Let's do it.
Oh man. So I don't even know where to start. Oh God. Okay. So, like the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie is a film that my mom took me to go see. It was like my first PG-13 movie in theaters, I remember. And I remember her being very concerned throughout a majority of that movie because it's very violent.
Yes.
It's scary.
Yeah. And like, I remember the first scene where she looked over at me was like when Willem Dafoe is like becoming the goblin and like his like scary little faces he makes, and I know she like tells the story all the time about like how she keeps looking at me and I'm just like drawn to the screen. And like so then I remember my uncle came down from Georgia like a few years later, like right before Spider-Man 2 came out, and he brought over like this giant U-Haul box of Spider-Man comics. Like I would say over 200 comics, like original 60s and 70s runs.
Oh my God.
And throughout my childhood, I read every single one of them. And Spider-Man 2 came out. I remember my mom like let me skip school. No, that was summer release. No, she didn't make me skip school. That was a different one. Spider-Man 3 was the one where she let me skip school to go see.
Hell yeah. We love to see
midnight
it.
Showing.
Remember midnight showings? Just like instead of the Thursday release. Like, I remember waiting in line for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and Part 2.
Yeah, I remember the last midnight showing I went to was The Dark Knight Rises back in 2012, I think.
Yep.
And I don't think they never happened, like, pretty much. I mean, they had, like, a little bit in 2012, but that was, like, the last big movie.
That's incredible. Do you have, like, a favorite comic arc of Spider-Man?
I know, there's going to be comic talk.
I'm living right now. I'm like, let's go.
Even though I can't contribute.
Not so much comic arc, but the early 2000s, like the Raimi films really inspired like a lot of interesting interpretations of the character, and that's why I think like movie adaptations are so like pivotal to like creativity in the comic industry, is because like it helps like the characters evolve over time. So I think every like era of Spider-Man art is like so deeply fascinating, and that's also why kind of off topic, but that's why I love Spider-Verse too, because it taps into every element of Spider-Man.
I will say, watching all three of these movies in the middle of one of them, at any given point, I was like, I'd really love to watch Spider-Verse right now. Like, it's just the best. Like, it is everything that you want from Spider-Man.
Well, you'll see it in the new Spider-Man 3 when every Spider-Man is in the movie.
Like,
I'm hyped for that.
Right?
I'm cautiously optimistic. And like, who's coming back? Molina's coming back.
Molina, Jamie Foxx.
Right.
Garfield, I feel like, and Toby, I don't know if they're 100% confirmed.
I think they are.
I think great.
Yeah.
I mean, how...
At this point, they weren't in the movie, and everyone thinks they're in the movie, and no one has put out like a PR
thing. They might as well just show up.
Right.
Marvel's got money to burn.
I mean, how old is Toby going to be in this one now? Because, I mean, he was 30, I think. I wrote down he was so 32 in the time of filming Spider-Man 3, so what's he going to be like now in his 40s?
Although, like, someone in LA took a picture of him at a costume fitting just randomly, like, the day after the rumors happened. He looked, like, in perfect shape.
Good for him.
Yeah. So I'm, like, on my other podcast, AOK, like, me and my friend Joey were both, like, equally Spider-Man friend. We were talking about this on our most anticipated of 2021 episode. We both were like, the second Toby appears on screen, if he's in the movie, we will both like cry. Like second he pops up. Because that's my entire, and I hate when people say this, but it was my childhood. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why we like, I think that this is a great target for you guys, because this was like an extremely seminal movie to a lot of people, you know, around our age during their childhood. I mean, not me, but other people, I would assume.
Kira, did you have like a relationship with this movie or?
So actually, I couldn't remember if I've ever seen it, but I used to watch the first two a lot because I had an older brother. And I have vivid memories of me walking around the TV section in like Sam's Club, and this was playing on the screens while I was waiting for my mom to finish grocery shopping. And I remember the ads in like Nickelodeon magazine, but I like famously do not like Marvel movies. I'm exhausted of them, and this is me and Adam's like only real conflict in life. And because he loves them so much, but I have to say that Spider-Man is the one that like I really do like.
Yeah,
I will see anything really Spider-Man, and even like the newer ones, like I really don't mind seeing them. They don't feel like a chore to me, while every other Marvel movie just feels like a chore for me to go see. Sorry, Adam.
But, no, I'm used to it at this point.
He's used to me bullying him, but yeah, I like that Spider-Man is really just like a regular dude, and I love Tobey Maguire, and these movies, like, I love, like, practical effects so much, and, like, this one, obviously, you guys said before, it kind of gets rid of the practical effects, but...
Sandman wasn't practical?
Oh, God.
Shit.
My worst fear, being covered in sand. that man did not have a good day.
Would you say that you hate sand, and maybe that it's coarse, and it's rough, and that it's irritating, it and that it gets everywhere?
It gets everywhere. But yeah, I mean, Spider-Man, cool. I'm glad that we watched this. I think that a lot of people like meme on this movie because there are like some very silly parts, but I like that it feels like intentional. Like, definitely. I like that there's a sense of humor, and one thing that I am really excited for is that Sam Raimi's coming back for Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, maybe it'll get a little bit of good vibes back to Marvel, and it won't feel like the same.
I just want to say, like, my stupid nerd theory about that entire Doctor Strange thing is how they've said, like, WandaVision, Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange are part of like that multiverse trilogy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
They are going to find a way, probably, to have Toby appear and Doctor Strange too. I feel like so. Sam Raimi,
that would be great.
Direct him like one more time, and
I would love.
Yeah, that just kills me, like in the best way. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense, and like I'm sure that as of this recording, there are still 2 weeks left of WandaVision, but I'm sure it's going to break open like a little bit of the multiverse. Doctor Strange is really properly going to crack it, and then for Spider-Man 3, it'll just be like ready to go, so that they can bring in literally anyone that they want. I assume that the multiverse is part of why like Chris Evans renewed his Marvel contract as well, because they can like bring him back from the 40s or whatever, bring him back from like his other timeline. We'll see. I'm sure maybe, I mean, like, is Spider-Man 3 maybe gonna be like Captain America Civil War, where it's like Avengers 2.5
probably
again, and it's like not, it is a Spider-Man movie, but it like is also an extreme world building movie. I don't know.
I was hoping that it was going to be like a very quiet Spider-Man, like a Kraven the Hunter trying to kill Spider-Man after his like identity is released to everyone, which is like the best Spider-Man comic to me. But
yeah, totally, because like when the second one ends, like it leaves, that's the idea of like what you have for the sequel is
right.
Because I kind of was like, how great would it be if it was just John Wick 3, but with Spider-Man? And
exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Exactly.
I just remembered that, like, Jake Gyllenhaal was in a Spider-Man.
He was.
Unhinged.
That was insane.
It was weird.
I mean, if we're just going to talk about, as we were, like, just on the Raimi thing, I feel like I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of, like, style and comedy. Like, he, I think, is the one of the few directors who understands that this is, like, a comic book. And knows how to make it a comic book movie. It's like the, for me at least, I feel like is the best translation of like a comic book to like the movie screen. Because if you just like, he knows how the fuck to block an action sequence. And if you even just look at the first one, it's like people, it was circulating a little bit on Twitter, like the fight scene with Flash Thompson, where he like ducks and you see the slow-mo and stuff. But like, that is like what a comic book panel is like. That is like what it feels like to read a comic book, and it's engaging and it's so tight. And you just like the horror sequences that he blocks. Like if you like in the second one in the hospital, when the like Doc Ock's arms are killing all the people, or the train, you know, it's just
genuinely one of the best sequences of all time. The hospital.
Oh my God. Yes, so good. It's just pure terror from those people, and just the way that he then goes into like the POV of the arms and attacks. It's great. And he like, as you were saying, like he, for this movie, it's like obviously like campy, and there's totally like a, like we'll get into like the queerness of it, but like people dunk on it for like bad emo Peter, but there's no world in which Sam Raimi wasn't like, oh, we're gonna like absolutely lean into this and make it as like corny and nerdy as we can, like of course, like his dance and the hip thrust, there's no way that he was like, this is serious and this is high art right now, like no.
And he sort of has earned the right to do it. I will say, like, watching these really did remind me how difficult it is, or I guess maybe even just how rare it is to like properly sequence a superhero action movie, and how often the action sequences end up like all feeling the same and not even feeling like they have like a proper place of like scope and space and time. Like people talk about Winter Soldier all the time and like the knife fight and on the bridge, and I feel like maybe that's like kind of close to what we're looking for, but like all of the New York web swinging sequences, and like I was thinking about into the Doc Ock fight, like on that skyscraper mm-hmm. with Aunt May, that stuff is just so like, it feels like really, really proper blocking in the best way.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
And
yeah,
he knows how to direct actors too. Like Alfred Molina and Rosemary Harris in the second one are giving such good performances. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, should be Academy Award nominated Rosemary Harris, when she's just like, this is what a superhero is and means to people. And I'm just crying like, that is what it means to people.
Yeah.
Well, I think with Spider-Man, like, he has, I would say, the best, people say it's sometimes Batman, but I think Spider-Man's like the best gallery of villains. Like,
oh yeah, it's a great one.
And it provides for actors to be drawn to these roles. Like, I mean, Kira already mentioned, like, Jake Gyllenhaal was in a Spider-Man movie, and that's so weird to me. And not only was he, like, in it, but he was great in it. I thought he
probably
was
the best part of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mysterio is my favorite villain, and the fact that they really actually adapted him, like, in a modern way that worked and wasn't completely stupid, like, it makes me so happy. Mm-hmm. But I think Alfred Molina gives my favorite performance as a villain in any comic book movie, other than like Heath Ledger, but like
it's a given.
I cannot speak. Yeah, it's incredible what he does with that.
I think it's like, I mean, just even look at like the fact that they haven't reused a Spider-Man villain yet.
Oh, have they? Well, they did Goblin, and
is we're Goblin get into an the amazing Spider-Man too?
It's Dane DeHaan. Yes.
Oh right. Yeah. You know, I thought it. Yes. I thought Dane DeHaan was Venom in like the third one. I was like, Dane DeHaan's in one of these things. No, nope. So
they mess up Hobgoblin. Yeah, they mess up the Hobgoblin a lot in the second Amazing Spider-Man movie. But
I mean, those movies a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I have some bad Spider-Man opinions, I think.
No such thing.
Okay, just like unique ones, because we did a episode on my other pod about Spider-Man, and I was like ranking them, and my friends were like yelling at me because of my ranking.
What is your ranking?
Jordan has a ranking.
We have a. I have a ranking as well.
I do not. Kira, do you? Either. Yeah. Okay.
No. I don't have enough like memory storage space in my brain for that.
Yeah, I know, but I will let you two please trade ratings. The people need to know.
I mean, it's not my entire ranking that's like so crazy. I don't think it's a hot take to say a Spider-Verse is like the best one, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, and then Spider-Man I would definitely 2, say that.
Spider-Man 2 is like firmly second place. And I love the Tom Holland movies, both of them. I think they're both like pretty much equal. Like, I love both of them. But my I have a very weird relationship with the Andrew Garfield movies where I don't like the first one. And that seems to be the one that people largely enjoy, and they think the second
interesting
one is
better off. Yeah.
I really like the second one. Like, a lot.
Wild.
Jordan.
Wild.
I was going to say it's not a perfect movie.
It does have Paul Giamatti screaming in a rhino suit, so defend I have to give it some points there.
Defend it.
I tweeted about Paul Giamatti in that movie too much this year. But the thing I love about that movie, and it's not a great movie by any means, but like when it gets Spidey right, it really gets him right. It's like a huge mess of a movie, but like there's a good chunk of that movie where it's just like a romantic comedy with him and Emma Stone. And then, you know... I mean, I don't think Jamie Foxx is that great as Electro, and Dane DeHaan's entire thing is
unhinged.
But there's a lot of good Peter Parker stuff in that movie.
He's Garfield. I will agree. I think Garfield is like, Tom Holland's probably my favorite, but just I feel like Garfield, he is like a very Peter Parker-y, and like I have to stan. He's like a good, I love Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker, and I feel so bad because the material was never like as good for him,
and he's just like 7 years too late,
right?
Like, it's a horribly obvious that he's like a 30-year-old in high school.
Well, I mean, like with this one too, it's like Toby was 27 and they're like, he's in high school, and you're like,
yeah,
is he though?
At least they sent him to college, though. I cannot tell you how much I appreciated that they sent him to college. I was like, thank God, I can buy him as a college student.
Yeah,
I cannot buy him as a high schooler. No, but no. That's okay.
When the high school teachers look the exact same age as him, it's a little scary. Yeah.
Well, I was having that conversation with my friend. I was like, isn't it weird that Andrew Garfield is like the best actor to, like, he is the best actor to play Spider-Man, but he is, I would say, the worst of the three.
You mean like he's the most like actor-y actor?
Like, I think he's the best like thespian of the three of them. Mm-hmm. Like his performance in like Silence and even Under the Silver Lake, which I like he's an incredible actor, and yet I don't like, I think he's a good Spider-Man, he just, it's more the material, it's never him.
Yeah.
So it's weird to me that he, even though he's like the best of the three, he has never gotten that like shining Spider-Man moment.
And he's like, obviously Garfield is like such a Spider-Man super fan and like loved it growing up and everything.
Have you seen that Comic-Con thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so cute.
It's one of the best Spider-Man like moments I've of all time. It's so cute. I love it.
Speaking of like Comic-Con big trailer moments, I feel like this movie,
Spider-Man,
just to tie it in, Spider-Man 3 in particular, that trailer when Venom was like shown was so like, it's like seared into my memory of the trailer of him like lunging at the camera and just everyone online going absolutely bananas for, and they were like, they're finally doing Venom, and then you see it and it's Topher Grace and you're just asking why. And it's just like, oh no, like this was not what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, and I feel like it's kind of like out of nowhere Topher Grace too, like he was just totally. Like, I want your job and my girlfriend back. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna simply turn into a monster.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
well, that's where I feel like there's my like queer one. Well, there's like four, as like I was texting Brooke, I feel like there's like six different reads of this movie and they're all happening. It's like a Venn diagram and there's like different points at which things overlap, because there's like the Sandman and Spidey and MJ, Harry and MJ, Spidey and Harry and all this stuff. But like with Eddie Brock, it's like, he's sort of like this male sapphic sort of like energy to him where it's like, do I want to like be with you? Do I want to be you? Like with Spider-Man, he goes to church and is like atoning for his sins. And he's just like humbled there trying to like clear out his queerness. But then like, of course, the one thing that he's lusting for is just like outside his reach at the church steps. And then there's that like final quote where he's like, I like the suit. It makes me happy. But like, I'm going to read that as like, I like being gay. It makes me happy. I mean, just,
Jordan,
I don't know.
This is like galaxy brain take.
Look, the Venom symbiote, if we're going to get into in the comics, is like, when it gets introduced, it's sort of like this thing with Peter and Eddie, but it basically introduces like a submissive, vulnerable, like man, because it's like a male like power fantasy complex that they get into. Like when they get this, they feel more powerful, but it's also this gender fluid like creature alien from space, sort of like under what's the Scarlett Johansson, I'm now blanking,
under the skin,
yes, where she kills men.
But it's like, actually that's a great like symbiote movie that's not even about any of that, but like I get it.
Yeah,
but it like plays with heteronormative tropes in the way like they depict like the male body on screen, and then you get into Venom recently with Tom Hardy, which is like the very exaggerated version of it. But the symbiote acts as sort of like this molten lava from space that like charges up these people's sexualities in different ways, and like looks to break up like the heteronormative relationship with like Peter and MJ, and it forces Peter to go like into emo / accepted gay like Peter, the way he like wears his hair and dresses and like behaves like in the jazz club and everything.
I was gonna say, well, let's think about the dancing that's like him under like peak symbiote influence.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I actually have, I don't know if it's like exclusive, but I have like exclusive information on that dance scene. I've interviewed the choreographer for this.
Cool.
Her name is Marguerite Derricks, and she's done like some really iconic movies. She did Showgirls. She did like the bleacher scene in 10 Things I Hate About You.
No fucking way.
I was like, oh my god, like she's done so many just iconic things, but she did this specific scene. And she said it was supposed to be a breakdancing scene.
Oh. Could you get more 2007?
Oh, no.
I don't think so.
And her and Tobey Maguire were like, no. And Sam Raimi was like, I don't know. Like, I don't think it's going to be that kind of dance. I don't know. So her and Tobey were like talking about it. And she was like, he was actually really into this, like he was really into like this style of dance, and like he was like really good at it, so they just kept practicing, and then they like proved to Sam Raimi, and then he was like, okay, I love this, and then it ended up being in the movie, and it's like the most iconic scene of the movie.
That's amazing.
Imagine if it was just like a breakdancing scene.
That would be legitimately bad, I think.
Oh, that would ruin them. That would ruin the movie.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Wow, this queen decided to snap that day and make this movie what it was.
Exactly. Wow. She was like, I felt so proud of myself that I just like proved myself and basically like changed the movie. I was like, oh,
okay. I mean, she should. I mean, that
created like extremely long lasting right. sequences.
I mean, the online discourse for this movie is like only about like that scene, like consistently. And I mean, especially like being online too young when this movie came out, not too young, but like when it came out, all the online talk was always just like, it was very much still in that bad joke version of like queerness where people would just be like, ha, gay, and like all that around this time. And so like every time you watch it, you're just like, it's, I cannot get the memes, I cannot get the jokes, like that is just so burned into like the online discourse probably forever.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's unfortunate because like there's a lot of like really good stuff in this movie, like,
oh yeah,
because like I feel like that's what the internet does too much, like they meme, and I don't get me wrong, like I love the meme culture of like film and stuff, it's great, but sometimes like it overrides like genuinely good filmmaking at points. And even Sam Raimi has like kind of disowned this movie, which I think is kind of interesting. Like he's come out and said like, I'm not happy with how this movie turned out, like I didn't get full creative control, like I did not want Venom in this movie, but there's parts of it that I like. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a mess of a movie, but I there's parts of it that I love so much. And I can't help but feel like the toxic, like meme-y kind of side of Twitter kind of ruined.
Yes.
It yeah.
It's crazy.
I think that's like one thing that I do like about like certain pockets of film Twitter is that like certain movies will get like reclaimed and mm-hmm. like there will be like a lot of like essays being like, here's why this movie's good. Here's why you should revisit this movie and pay attention to it again. And Adam and I were talking about it a few weeks ago and we were like, I think Cat in the Hat is the only movie that we haven't been able to find an essay on reclaiming it.
I think that means you just need to write the essay.
Yeah, the essay is for
That's
you.
That's the only clear
We've covered
conclusion.
It twice, so yes. we gotta collab on something, Adam.
Certainly you have the expertise needed to do so. Yeah, I think it is so crazy how internet culture can make or break something. And like, it's been very interesting to see like large brands do basically like trend hopping. I'm sure that it will change once we're back in the theatrical model, because it'll be like, okay, well, we actually need to make money. We don't just need like the views, but whoever is the moment at the moment, like online, particularly on Twitter, brands will basically like bandwagon, be like, okay, well, what do we have that relates to this current
trend?
The WandaVision
stuff.
Like the WandaVision stuff, like Amazon Prime tweeting like Wind River stan culture tweets. And
oh my God, yeah.
Netflix.
It's not even on Amazon Prime. That frustrated me so much.
It's so weird. And Netflix being like, Catherine Hahn is the moment when it's like, but you didn't even promote the right. movie that she was starring in when it was on your platform. It's so weird. And it's like that, I don't know, like maybe this will lead to a weird subsect of people discovering Private Life or discovering Wind River, but like,
would be great.
Think about, it's just, I can see brands basically taking the memes from something like Spider-Man 3 and being like, well, we're going to reclaim these memes because these memes are relevant right now. Like, let's say that this ends up on, I don't know, Disney Plus in 2 years, and when Spider-Man 3 comes out, the official Disney Plus account is like, remember that iconic dance sequence from Spider-Man 3?
Totally.
You love to see it? Like, that's what it's become.
Absolutely.
And it's like, the memes are now like a currency of their own because like they drive actual like internet discussion instead of talking about, like you said, Adam, talking about like the actual quality of the picture that you're mm-hmm. watching.
And that's funny because, like, even, I mean, again, Spider-Verse, masterpiece, absolute 10 out of 10, guys. But even Spider-Verse in the first 5 minutes makes fun of the dance sequence.
Yeah.
But it's also funny, like, when even the same company that produced it in another film references, like, the thing that's memed on and dunked on. Like, I find that fascinating within itself. Like, when the films in the same series are self-critical. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I just find it fascinating. Quite frankly. Like, I think
yeah.
I couldn't believe what a lasting impact these films had, like, also, like, meme-wise. Watching all three of them back-to-back, I was like, oh, that's a meme. Oh, that's a meme. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that was
90% of J.J. Abrams, or not J.J. Abrams, oh my God. J. Jonah Jameson, when he's on screen, it's like all, every reaction he have is a meme.
When Aunt May is praying and like the windows get blown out behind her, literally had no idea that that meme was from these movies. I was so shocked.
Dafoe also, like, all of his things where he's like, I'm a little bit of a this myself.
I'm a little bit of a scientist myself. Yes.
Right. Also, Willem Dafoe's performance, just while we're here, line delivery when he dies is the greatest. Like, it's the greatest, four cuts. No, where he's just like, the things come out, Spidey jumps, and like, it cuts to the knife, like, going towards him. He just goes, like, oh. And then it's like five cuts of him, like, dying in different ways. Stabbed. It's so good.
I mean, I already saw, like, Alfred Molina gives, like, one of my favorite villain performances of all time. So does Willem Dafoe. He's absolutely incredible, and I like that he comes back in every single one for like a little like flashback, like,
definitely
vision sequence with James Franco. Like, I think it's great.
I mean, no man looks like a goblin more than Willem Dafoe.
I do love his little voice, his little
like from like the portrait on the wall.
Yes.
Well, like in the first one, they were supposed to have him wear like these green prosthetics and actually become a goblin. But then they like masked him up, which I think is a travesty because he has a perfect face for Green Goblin. And
really
I
does.
Wish I could see the screen test footage for that because it would have been magical.
I love some of the behind the scenes footage. I think it's specifically from the first one, but have you guys ever seen the video of Alfred Molina singing Fiddler on the Roof in his costume?
Yes.
It's maybe the best video to ever grace the internet. Good. And also just like shows off Molina's range that he was in this movie and like rehearsing for Fiddler on Broadway like at the same time. Like, what a king.
The arms were actually something that were like controllable and could use. Like, it's like a hilarious video, but it's also like, oh, that's all real and like it's actually moving around. And it's not just like CGI that they use for the movie. Like, they could literally like mess around with it. Like, behind the scenes, like, that's so funny to me.
That's why that movie like looks so good, and why the third one is such a weird like step backwards in terms of effects. Even like the Harry Peter snowboard fight looks like shit, and I was like, wait,
it's so funny that he has a glider, but they put him on a snowboard to be like hip and cool.
Like, it's so funny. He has like the matching goggles and everything. But like, we've just seen two movies of like incredible New York web slinging skyscraper fight business, and then the third one, like, that opening fight is so just much messy. Worse. Yeah. Like, it's so messy. There's not the same like choreo that you want. I think it's weird that they did it.
Short-term memory
is lost. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, and like really short-term because like it comes back like in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm still like, all these years later, I'm still unclear of how it comes back.
He just needed a little trauma reminder.
His dad talks to him, and that's it. Yeah. And then it's feigning his interest for MJ, but he really wants to just get with Peter or get Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his whole lust / need to kill Spider-Man / Peter is it's ridiculous.
Well, Harry and Peter are like, I think, my favorite dynamic throughout all three of these movies, and also like very much like homoerotically obsessed with each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so the thing, let me just say that a reason that I think that I didn't connect to like Spider-Man in general, like, I like Spider-Man, but I wouldn't say that I'm like necessarily a Spider-Man fan. And I feel like there's nobody, I feel like it is a very like boy-centric superhero, like, more than most.
False. My sister's favorite superhero.
Well, I'm not saying that no girls like Spider-Man, I feel like it's especially hard to like project onto the female characters in Spider-Man because like they're so bland. Yes, like, there's nothing there. But this is what, like, that is the prime example of what we talk about a lot on the podcast with like where homoeroticism sort of like accidentally ends up coming from, is that your female characters are so much like a two-dimensional cardboard cutout that having two men fight over a cardboard cutout feels a lot more like they're fighting for each other than it does that they like really need this girl with no personality. Poor Kirsten Dunst. I think she's good in these movies, but like, oh my god, there is nothing.
You're an empty seat.
Nothing.
It's that so heterosexualized that it becomes like that, as you were saying, that homosexual content, and it's definitely just between Peter and Harry, especially.
Well, they have like the relationship that evolves and changes the most, because him and MJ are like whatever. I feel like a lot of their falling apart and getting back together is motivated by the fact that the films need conflict and not actually by like what's happening with them. But like in contrast to that, Harry and Peter is like very motivated, and like what happens with their relationship like happens in the plot first and then trickles down, and not the other way around.
Definitely.
I guess.
Yeah. I feel like the only good MJ and Peter is like the second one that really like actually fleshes out sort of the dynamic of like what she wants a little. It's the best of her of the three. It's not great, but it's the best of her. On the Spidey thing, I feel like the reason, just as you said, like the reason I feel like I gravitated it to it so much, and Kira, you kind of mentioned it too, how it's like with the one that you're interested in. I feel like there's the potency with him as a character because he is sort of broke, like can't get a job. It's like he's the most relatable of any superhero because...
And he's a kid.
Right, exactly. He's like our age. He can't get a job. He has like trouble with his parents, step, like, you know, aunt and uncle, whatever it may be. Can't hold down a significant other. And so it's just those, I feel like, are the pieces that like hit the most. And so it's interesting with these movies when they're aged up in a way because the actors are so much older that those things don't feel as... So like when he's struggling in relationships, you're like less invested in that just because he looks so much older. But then with like Tom Holland, it feels a little more...
Because they don't feel understandable. Like dumb teenagers because they're in their late 20s. But yeah, I mean, Spider-Man is supposed to be a peer for the people watching and not like an aspiration the way that like Captain America or Wonder Woman or Batman, even though no one should aspire to be Batman. But like those are like...
Dead parents!
Those are like aspirational superheroes, and Spider-Man is supposed to, he's like, he's a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's like the boy next door.
I think another thing too regarding his relationship with MJ is the fact that like a lot of the silliness, it almost feels like, especially in this one, that he's almost like because he's like such an awkward, like relatable person. It feels a lot like he's like performing in his relationship with her. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like specifically in the beginning of this one, he's just like, oh, I'm gonna marry her. I'm gonna marry her. And then Aunt May's like, she like literally mentions like, oh, we were too young. Like we're too young. And it just feels very like when he's like planning the proposal and stuff, it's like, oh, like do this and this and this. And he's like so like calculated with it. And I know that like does happen in real life, but I think just like his like awkwardness with it and how... Like, I feel like a lot of his moves are just like, this is what you're supposed to do when you're in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it almost also feels like his relationship with Eddie is more Harry. Yeah. Eddie? Okay.
Both of them.
Let's be real.
It feels like they're a lot more fleshed out because it feels like his relationship with MJ, which literally in the plot is not the first thing on his mind, always.
Right.
Correct. Yeah. I feel like that's a really good read, especially because it's literally deranged that Mary Jane would be almost married twice and still be in college, ostensibly. That's absurd. That's such a random... I think it's so funny, but like that would never happen now. Like the minute he was like, I'm gonna propose to her, I was like, he's gonna what?
I love when in the second one, when she runs through the end in the like through wedding dress, when there's like a gauzy fall like lens, and it's just like she's running in slow motion. It's just like, I love this.
I was trying to figure out why she would get married in the first place, and I mean, I assume it's because J. Jonah Jameson Jr. Whatever his name is going to space. It's kind of like he's going off to war.
In the comics, he goes off to space and basically turns into like a wolf man.
Ooh, Spider-Man 4, let's go.
It's kind of cool.
I love the trope of like in a sequel, the like the son of a other prominent character is who the love interest is marrying. Like that's a very specific trope, but that's something that Spider-Man 2 taps into really well. And J.K. Simmons like hams it up perfectly in that one.
He's so good.
He's so good.
I like his pills in Spider-Man 3. That is like a good meme. Good
with
meme
Elizabeth
content.
Banks.
When she showed up, I was shocked. And I was like expecting her to basically like explode between 1 and 2 and that she wouldn't be in them anymore. But nope, she's still there.
Just the same character.
Two scenes.
If I can like plug just a very random thing.
Please.
No, please.
And Spider-Man, for the video game Spider-Man 3 for like PlayStation 2 or something.
Yeah.
There's a video on YouTube of J.K. Simmons and Tobey Maguire in the recording booths doing the dialogue with Topher Grace, I believe. And it's, like, the funniest thing, like, how committed they all three get to the video game. Like, they're just, like, screaming at each other in the recording booth. And it's, like, one of my favorite videos of all time. And it's so just, like, good. J.K. Simmons talking about, yeah, there's an art form to, like, making video games. And, like, and it's just, it's so adorable. Like, I just suggest checking that out. It's great.
Yeah,
the video games too. I mean, the Spider-Man 2 video game, so good with the pizza time. Oh,
is there a pizza time like?
It's like obstacle? You have to collect pizzas.
Oh,
the way I described Spider-Man 2 as a video game, like up until Spider-Man PS4 came out, I'm not even a gamer. Like, I just love Spider-Man games. Spider-Man 2, I would always describe as like Grand Theft Auto. If you like couldn't hurt people, you just helped people. But it's basically like just a free roaming game where you're Spider-Man, and it's amazing.
What's the latest Spider-Man game? The one
there's
that was
a Miles
like
Morales one.
Incredible. No, yeah. the one before that.
It's like just Spider-Man PS4. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's great. It's like an open world New York. It's amazing.
But it's very recent, right?
Yeah. Like
right.
Yeah, 28
okay. 2 years ago. Yeah.
I'm catching up. It's fine. I've never played a video game in my life. But sounds good. Kira, are you a gamer?
I actually used to play the first Spider-Man game on PS1. It wasn't based off the movie. It was just like whatever. And it had like all the villains in it. And I remember like being like, oh, this one isn't in this movie. Like, I didn't understand how it worked. And like seeing them in the movie, I'd be like, why aren't they in the game? So I used to do that a lot. And I guess that was like a little bit open world New York, like as much as it could be on PlayStation 1. But that was definitely something that I liked a lot. Yeah, just looking back. But yeah, I mostly just play like Animal Crossing now.
I think open world is a great concept though for Spider-Man, because isn't that like essentially what you want to see in the movies, like villains or whatever, but you really just want to roam around and like swing through New York.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the PS4 game gets right. Like so much is like so much of Spider-Man is not fighting villains. It's just the little things like helping citizens do random objectives. Like Jordan, I don't know if you've like played
yeah.
it, but
it's, no, yeah, played like, both.
He's played it all.
They're both, I mean, Miles Morales too, like it's incredible.
So good.
And just like his little interactions with the people of New York, it's
mm-hmm.
it just warms my heart so much, like how well they understand.
And it's, I feel like, I agree, I'm gonna big tie it back, because in the Spider-Man game, they have so many different, they bring in like the Sinister Six, which for you, Brooke, they're basically like the big six, like Spider-Man villains, like all
oh,
try
cool.
to kill him. But they handle multiple villains in like such a clear and nice way, with like Doc Ock as like the central sort of baddie. And with this one, I think there's a way you can introduce multiple villains and have it work. But this movie does it in such a forced way where it feels like Venom doesn't work and Sandman don't work, because you don't sort of give them the time, and like the producer, like Avi Arad, forced Venom into this one. But and Raimi didn't want to, as he sort of said, he wanted like Vulture, and then that would have been his fourth one. But
wait, I want to hear about all the studio meddling.
Okay, so basically Avi Arad, who's like the grand overseer of Spider-Man at Sony, forced Venom and Gwen Stacy, aka Bryce Dallas Howard in a terrible wig, into
terrible.
This movie. It became like the most expensive film ever made at the time. Sam Raimi wanted to show like the humanity in villains, and how like Spider-Man had to carry around like his sins, and was going to wrap up Harry's arc, which he does, but they forced like the double villains into this, and they didn't want Raimi to put the Vulture in this because they felt that he had too much control over the villains that have been seen on screen. And Venom is Spider-Man's most like popular villain,
right?
And had it been seen on screen, and they were like, we need, the fans are demanding this, so we need this as a storyline no matter what. And so they forced it in, and obviously then we see like what happens with Venom. And then the fourth one that Raimi was going to do was going to be John Malkovich as the Vulture and Anne Hathaway as Black Cat. But she wasn't going to be Black Cat, but like could have been Black Cat. It's kind of like unknown. But like just the thought of John Malkovich as like an unhinged villain is incredible.
That's really crazy.
The opening scene was supposed to also be Bruce Campbell as Mysterio.
That rules.
Yo!
who pops up in all three of these incredible cameos.
That was supposed to be like the thing that tied it all together, is like he's always stopping Peter from doing something, like that's the joke. And Raimi wanted to like make that like, yeah, it's been Mysterio this entire time.
That rocks.
Like, I love that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like some giant action sequence with Mysterio. And then just like before the title card like comes up, it's like it's just like him dragging him into a police station, and then like then it cuts to credits, and it's like, oh, like damn it, now I want it.
That would have been so nice.
It is really interesting to look at the parallels with John Malkovich as Vulture. I feel like is extremely similar to Michael Keaton as Vulture, yep, in a really good way. And even like Anne Hathaway as Black Cat, and then like
Catwoman
plays Catwoman. That's crazy.
But even then they wanted Kurt Connors as the Lizard, and then in the new Amazing Spider-Man, it's that. It's like they carry so much of what Raimi wanted into the Amazing Spider-Man trilogy, or
Duology. I'm sure it was supposed to be more than a duology.
Oh, for
right?
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just
that's the interesting thing is like you already brought up like Avi Arad, who I believe is the most cursed thing to happen to the Spider-Man franchise.
Yeah, the devil.
Yeah, literally. I mean, no, literally. Like he has so much control over this franchise for a guy that absolutely does not understand Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even me being like a bitter fan. Like literally, like watch any interview that he's in talking about Spider-Man, and you'll know like he knows nothing about the character, and it's actually insulting like how little he knows, and like but how much he claims to know. It's really depressing. And this is the guy that for years, like, he ruined Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, he ruined Andrew Garfield. And I'm so thankful that he's not able to like ruin Tom Holland because
Marvel's
not here for this earth.
It's true. He's a cinnamon roll.
Yes.
Cinnamon roll. Oh my God. I've never heard that descriptor for someone. And I need to start using
cinnamon
that.
Cinnamon roll, too good for this world, too pure.
That's so wholesome.
And then it's like there's like this whole meme format where it's like, looks like a cinnamon roll, but will actually kill you. Looks like they'll kill you, but is actually a cinnamon roll.
How have I not? Whoa.
Really?
Wow.
Wow. I feel like maybe I'm letting my Tumblr color show a little bit, though. But yeah, it's like it's...
Can you guys believe that Tom Holland and Nicki Minaj were dating?
I mean, so crazy. No, Jordan has a look of abject horror on his face.
Okay, this was a bit...
It's a joke. It's a joke.
I almost...
James Charles in the middle of it.
Like, flashed in front of my eyes.
Whenever I like my group of friends and my boyfriend are like talking, he's like, there's like an internet one and an internet two, and like the first one is like the regular memes that are like funny, and the second one is just the memes that make zero sense, like Tom Holland dating Nicki Minaj and like James Charles coming between them and breaking
yes.
them up and things like that.
Thank you.
But this is internet too.
Yes. No, there are deep memes. And like you don't really know like how deep people are until you reference something that's like
clearly
weirdly deep. Like Loss. If I said Loss, does anyone
yes.
Okay, thank you. But that's like internet four. That's like yeah. very
it's like Scientology where you have to like level up in internet.
Yeah.
Got it. You're like trying to become the Tom Cruise of internet.
Yeah, see, I feel like I know deeper internet lore, but you know more about like the internet in general. Like you know like every corner. I just know
you're
extremely
very deep
specific
into certain things.
Things.
I really respect it though. I love
it's a good
this.
Balance, you know. Yeah.
To tie it back,
yes,
with this plot, we can start to work through. I mean, it's
yeah, let's talk about
so
it.
Just for you guys, what storyline works the most, and which one do you think doesn't work? What do you take away from this movie? Like, which one do you like and what do you not like? Because it's
there's
just so,
so much happening.
So personally, in the cutting room, I would have completely taken out Sandman because it's just like pointless. Like that's like two separate.
Agree.
It's two separate movies completely.
Right, you see what they're going for, but like, what does it add?
He literally adds nothing.
It's like also like they just have to have that twist being like, actually, he killed him. It's like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to make us believe that. Also, whenever he talked, we recently covered Over the Hedge. Whenever Thomas Hayden Church talked, I'm like, mm-hmm. That's the exterminator from Over the Hedge. That's the only
that
thing
is...
I associate him with.
Yeah, I hate that. Because when I went home for Christmas break, my father loves Over the Hedge so much and put it on and I watched, and that movie is so like It's like a dark hole in my brain, a void that I try to avoid at all times.
That was a really dark period of American cinema, because I feel like Open Season was like the same year or like a year after. Too many animal hijinks. Yeah, it's just like so horribly upsetting. Hammy. I agree, though. I agree on Sandman for sure.
Well,
retconning Uncle Ben is obviously terrible. I just don't understand they totally could have left Thomas Hayden Church in his Schwarzenegger cosplay, like completely gotten rid of him, and the movie would just be a little bit shorter. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't remove anything. It's crazy.
It's also like a weird like way to almost forgive the death of like somebody who he loved a lot. Like, mm-hmm. there's like a really weird forgiveness scene at the end that like didn't need to happen. And also, I think that Bryce Dallas Howard. I was like, wow, I can't believe Amy Adams went blonde for this movie. I think that it was a weird, like, obviously it had to cause conflict in him and MJ's relationship, but I think that there is enough conflict in the fact that like he got really like cocky.
Oh my god, yeah.
That could have been the thing that set them apart. It didn't have to be. And I think that also comes into like the like kind of like queer reading of it is the fact that she like starts paying attention to him and he's immediately like, okay, like she's into me, like I'm into her, like I'll just kiss her, like they're telling me to kiss her, I'll kiss her, like, and I think that that kind of adds to it. But I think that it would have been just a compelling movie if it was just like the three of them, like it was just like Harry and Spider-Man and
MJ. Yeah, totally. Like I like them as a love triangle because it like is definitely as much of a love triangle between Harry and Peter.
I mean, post brain injury, Harry kind of gives big thruple energy.
Oh, he does. He's like, why don't we all just come over?
Right.
My best friends. We'll have a nice time in front of my giant fireplace.
Portrait of my father.
Imagine if it just ended with like he just stays with his like memory loss and they just all start dating each other. They just all move in together.
Five stars.
I think more love triangles should end in thruples. Okay, instead of having to pick between these two people, why don't we all just have a good time,
like, you know? Steve Rogers, Bucky, and also Peggy. Great.
I mean, yes.
You know the Twitter like the tweet that it's like a thruple. Honey, I think you just want parents. I think that's just Harry.
Yes. Yes.
He needs some positive guardian figures in his life.
I mean, that
you know?
Butler's not doing shit. The butler's like, I loved your father and I loved you.
Like, what is it that they, why did they give the butler a subplot in this movie? I was like, who is this man? We don't need to see this. I just have to say before we move off of Bryce Dallas Howard, which I'm sure
shortly. We need to discuss.
Oh, please.
Just, it's the hair.
It's bad. Brooke,
what is happening with that hair?
I'm just really obsessed with the fact that they were like, okay, so MJ, she's mostly Peter's girlfriend, but we're going to give her some agency of her own. We're going to make her an actress. Okay, so Gwen Stacy. Right. We have another woman. Okay, so we need to give her a career. How about a model?
On printers?
That seems definitely like just it's
awful.
But she's also in school for science because she's his lab partner.
Right.
So like, why not give her like a scientist in the lab or something?
It's upsetting like how little they do with her, because Gwen is like one of the best Spider-Man characters. Like,
she's great.
She's an amazing character, and they just do nothing. They resort her to like a romantic comedy trope in this movie, and it's terrible. Like, it's actually offensive because she has, I mean, thankfully, like, I think even the Amazing Spider-Man films redeemed her, but like Spider-Verse redeemed her, obviously.
She's the best in Spider-Verse.
Yeah. I mean, Emma Stone's great in The Amazing Spider-Man. Look, like, I will never not be on the Andrew Garfield Emma Stone ship. Like, I am still on that ship, even though that ship is at the bottom of the ocean.
It broke my heart when they separated.
It's the most crushing breakup.
It was so, because they were just like, it was at the exact height of when these movies were like dominating like internet, and everyone was so in love with Andrew Garfield anyway, and everyone loved Emma Stone because of Easy A. It was just like the perfect storm of like, oh my god, and they're dating. It actually did.
It's the toughest breakup.
It hurts so much.
I mean, like, Troy and Gabrielle, aka Zac Efron and Vanessa, whatever, like, we cared about them, but like, Andrew and Emma, those were the ones I invested my
Stonefield, man.
It's hard.
It hurts. Yeah. But I mean, everything about that is so bad. Also, how fucking dumb do you have to be to kiss a woman in front of your girlfriend on the day that you're planning to propose to her? I would just like to know what exactly was going through that boy's head.
Men. He was thinking about other guys.
Yeah, exactly. He felt pressured to.
Isn't that the whole idea? This is what I have to do. Yeah. He's preoccupied with Eddie. He's preoccupied with Harry.
Right.
Woof.
He's got boys on the brain.
Oh my God. This is... Sure. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I see it.
I mean, the Eddie thing, it's... I don't know. I feel like the Eddie... Because it's weird, because I feel like Topher is not giving a good performance at all. He is in a different movie.
I love Topher Grace. Sure. In general. Not in this movie. But yeah. I like him.
What do you like him?
I don't know. I like him.
Yeah, he's fine. But
I like him too.
All right. Maybe it's a Topher cast. But I think he's just so miscast in this movie. Because like Venom, you kind of want a Tom Hardy.
I was going to ask who you guys would like to see instead of Topher Grace.
Tom
I feel
Hardy.
Like it's generally agreed upon that he was miscast. But like in 2007.
That's a good question. Because Eddie Brock in the thing is, Eddie Brock in the comics is, correct me if I'm wrong, he's kind of like a jock. So I don't think they've ever really nailed him. I like Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock, but in 2007, I'm trying to think of like
who was a jock. Yeah.
So he's kind of like a bruiser, but he's also a journalist. So I feel like
that's the thing. And I love these careers. It's like, Spider-Man is a genius, but he's also a photographer.
And, like, doesn't do shit with science.
Right, I love it. I don't know. Who was, like, a hunk in 2007?
Like, Freddie Prinze Jr.?
He's, like, too kind of skinny-ish.
Adam likes it.
I like that.
Like, Joe Manganiello as Flash kind of feels like the vibe, you know?
Maybe, like, is Lucas Till, like, after this time? Yeah, I think I don't know. He was like big, like Disney hottie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think honestly, I can't think of like somebody who would be up and coming in 2007, but I think that in a role like this, because Venom was so like, there was so much like excitement around him, I think it would have been really good if it was like an up and coming actor or somebody that was transitioning from like child actor to adult actor, because it would have been like a shock to see them when it was like the surprise that he's Venom in that role. And I feel like something like that, because everyone was so hyped, would really like push them into the mainstream and like start their career.
It's just sad because it's like, I like what they're doing. Like it's too stuffed. Like Sandman has to go. And I agree that Venom's forced in there, but I like sort of the I like seeing Venom and Spider-Man on screen together, just not because as a comic fan, but sort of what they represent and how Venom is just like the complete opposite of Spider-Man. And it's like this whole movie is really like about like doubling and like how you perceive yourself, how you want to be perceived, and then like you trying to be someone else and like someone else trying to become you. And like Venom kind of, there's a way to tap into those themes in an interesting way. And if you have like a queer approach to Venom, there's even more to that to unpack with like how he like looks at and wants to sort of be Peter and then become Peter. But then they really just fumble the bag because they just introduce him, but then he's gone for 30 minutes and then he's back. But then he's at the whole third act and then Sandman's back and it's like, okay.
Well, that's where majority of the issues in this movie lie. It's like there's a lot of interesting ideas, but none of them feel like fully formed or like developed enough to actually mean something. Like, and that's the complete opposite of like Alfred Molina in the first or in the second movie, like where that entire movie, I would say it's as much of a Doc Ock movie as it is a Spider-Man movie. But none of the villains in this movie are given the same amount of time because it's all so divided that you can't properly care. And even though I like this movie still, after everything we've already talked about, there are some like definitive flaws in it that weigh it down. And that's why Sam Raimi, like I said, disowned it after all these years. He is not proud of it.
Super Yaki, does whatever a Super Yaki does.
Very nice.
Buy a shirt from a site. Can you? Yes, you can. Look out. There is the Super Yaki.
I think that was amazing.
I think that was sweaty, but I did it, and now it's out there, so I can't turn around.
Look, at this point, you already know what it is. If you love movies, like we love movies, Superyaki is the place for you, okay? We love them. They love us.
We love webbing up these clothes.
We do. You know, Superyaki, it's right in the name. They deserve to be in the pantheon of superheroes.
That's a true statement.
They are saving our lives every day with high-quality, niche movie merchandise. They have a whole pantheon of weapons at their disposal.
Ooh.
Including
who are these villains?
And socks and hats and mugs.
Oh my goodness.
And amazing collaborations with a whole team up of amazing independent artists and collaborators.
They assembled the Avengers.
It's really the Avengers of internet movie merch.
Honestly, it's a fact.
And they are just the best. They bring you tangible love letters to movies and filmmakers, and you can wear that with pride. And
guess
hey,
what?
Look. What?
Oh, I was going to say, they have literally Spider-Man merch.
Yeah, the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack is my emo dad. Ugh. Alfred Molina could have done it.
We can web up those.
Because he could have. They truly have the best merch of all time. You've heard us talk about them before, and you will hear it again. And you know, they're sustainable superheroes. They screen print all their apparel using
Captain Planet fucking who?
Yes, 100% water-based inks, and they ship with compostable poly mailers. Look, it's an environmentally friendly alternative to online shopping that you and the world can feel good about. And hey, guess what? For you, our loyal fans, the citizens of QQ.
Oh no.
You can save 10% on your order with code SUPERQQ, all caps, no spaces, and hook yourself up with a good ass
a new costume
outfit.
A
yes.
new costume.
Absolutely.
Capes or no capes?
Oh,
no capes.
So, if the spirit moves you or the superhero moves you, you can find them at superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com. Let's save the city and watch more movies.
Superyaki does whatever a superyaki does.
Woo!
For you, Brooke, watching this, it's like a first time viewer,
right?
What was your like experience like watching this? Because I feel like you come off one, you're like, okay, great, this is a superhero movie. You come into two, you're like, wow, they improved, it's a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
How do you come, like, what does this movie do to your brain?
The thing is, I was able to look at these like really objectively because, like I mentioned, I don't have a particular attachment to like the Spider-Man universe or like the character of Spider-Man. So I was watching it like the way that I assume Kira watches Marvel movies. I was like, let's just go in and sort of see what happens. Like, I don't really have any investment in this. So yeah, I mean, like, I liked the first one. I honestly didn't like the first one as much as I thought I would. Obviously, I thought the second one was a masterpiece, though. It's so good. It's so good. I don't know. Going into the third one, I was like, well, I know this is the weird one. I know this is the campy part. I feel like it actually fit together in terms of like the memedom better than I expected, because I never knew that the whole emo Spider-Man dancing sequence, et cetera, was caused by the symbiote. I thought it was just like Peter trying out a cool new thing. Which is why which is why I was so perplexed, and I was like, why on earth would they do this? It seems like such a weird choice. But like with the symbiote sort of like explanation in place, I was like, actually, I think that this makes sense in a way. I was more disappointed by the Sandman business. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like how disjointed it felt. I know that it was like the early 2000s, but I was so disappointed throughout all three movies with like, I don't know, not that Mary Jane really has a character, but they did her so dirty.
They do her so dirty.
Like,
in this
I
one.
Hate that she just like consistently gets kidnapped at the third act.
The third oh my
of
God.
Every movie.
Oh my God. This one especially is just like the like, of course. And she's like in a taxi in a web. Like,
yeah.
It was so funny. I think it was like a police scanner or it was like the news, but they were just like, there is a woman who was on Broadway in for a short period
Broadway
of time
star.
In a taxi hanging off of the 80th floor from a web. It's just like, yeah. There's some. That sentence alone is like, it just sums up the whole movie. Like, that's the summary of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so bad too, because like when James like forces her to like dump Peter because she's like seeing someone else, you're like, oh, like this is exhausting.
It's
and then
so
when she
stupid.
Kisses James too, you're like
yeah,
this would not happen.
I appreciate, though, that James is like, I'm going to get Peter back so good by forcing his girlfriend to break up with him, and then he'll have to pay more attention to me.
Also, I love that, like, his entire idea of, like, an ideal date night, which I can't even say it's a bad date night, but, like, just making omelets together and, like, dancing in the kitchen. Like that's such an... It's so campy and cheesy, but, like, those little moments are what make this movie for me.
Yeah, I like that scene a lot.
The omelet's cute.
He was so good when he had his memory lost. He should have just stayed like that. He should have just stayed, like, zero brain cells. I'm gonna make an omelet and dance. Absolutely.
It's basically my dream, man.
I love that he asks his butler too. He's like, hey, butler, can you like go pick up some food for us?
Why and is
then,
he British?
I don't know. But then they immediately cut from him asking the butler to pick up food, and then they're cooking omelets, and you're like,
so he picked up ingredients.
Get groceries? But like, don't make a big deal about someone coming over and having to prepare the house if you're just going to make food.
It's kind of weird how much chemistry they have in that scene, though, because I feel like I was watching that and I was like, look at them dancing. Wow, I truly have not seen this much chemistry between Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst in three movies, because they're never allowed to do anything fun. They're just always in pain. Yeah.
They're always just like gazing up at the sky. I think a lot of like the like chemistry between them is just like, I can make you a web to lay on.
Literally.
Basically.
That's the upsetting thing too, because like what I said about Gwen Stacy, it's like MJ is also a better character than like what they give her in the comics. I mean, don't get me wrong, she has definitely in so many comics been the damsel in distress, but like there's a lot of really good things to pull from, like where she is very pivotal to the story and to like whatever Spidey is doing. Like she's also incredibly talented and like intelligent, and like these movies just do nothing with her. So that's definitely like an upsetting factor to it.
I feel the video game does great. Like makes MJ have like a ton of agency, and she's like super active. You have like a whole mission where you're like as MJ, like snooping and like doing things, and it's cool to like give her agency.
Is she an actress in the comics? Is that a Raimi? Oh, okay. Oh,
well, it's like
never knew.
It's one of those things where it's like she's an actress sometimes, a journalist sometimes. You know, right. Depends on like the canon that we're in, but. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Zendaya?
I personally like Zendaya as Michelle. As Michi. Michelle slash MJ. Marie. But it's mostly because I like Zendaya. And I think it's cool that they like gave Peter a crush on like the weird girl, you know, because he's a weird kid. And I feel like in most of the movies, MJ is like the popular girl that everyone wants to be with. And so I appreciate that he was like, he's a little nerdy kid. He's going to like have a crush on like this little nerdy girl instead. I mean, she's good. I think their chemistry is weird, though, in the MCU movies. And it's weird because they seem to have good chemistry, like, as people. But I think they're too awkward. Mm-hmm. And also, the MCU, like, hates sex with a passion. So,
I mean, in Far From Home, the latest one, first of all, I loved that movie. I don't get why the internet is turning on it. I mean, at least the MCU fandom hates that movie for some reason.
It's probably why I liked it.
Yeah, it's great, because like I mean, I know you said like the awkwardness kind of like ruins the chemistry for you, but like that's what I love about it. Like there's so many sequences in that movie where it feels like actual teenagers like interacting. My heart was like exploding like a majority of that movie, because I'm like, they understand Peter Parker's like awkwardness so perfectly, and it like warmed my heart. Great, like it's like I care about that shit way more than like him punching people. Like that's what I love about Spider-Man and why he's my favorite superhero. So,
and I think that is like what gets at the heart of Spider-Man as like a character, is that people don't care about, like, I mean, he does have great superpowers. Obviously the web slinging is like so fucking great, but like you care about him as a kid, as like a guy. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I feel like for so many people, he was them. Yeah. Like we were all the weird nerdy kid in high school. We all wanted to get superpowers.
Oh yeah.
you know, oh, just to feel special.
Every day. I love in Far From Home, the relationship that actually worked the best for me was Ned and Betsy, when they're just like decide to love be them. Like a love couple for only the trip, and then they break up at the end of it. There's like just irrevocable differences, like, you know, we're going our separate ways. I'm like, great, this is a high school romance.
And I love that they basically go to like old married couple within the span of like 2 months and then immediately break up. It's good.
That's great.
I love in that movie how accurate it gets, like the idea of like AP kids,
yeah,
and like debate team energy, like it really gets that like clickiness and like trying to outdo each other. And I really do like the interpretation of implying, and like not saying it because they're trying to make it a kids movie, but implying that like MJ is just like this like stoner girl who's like a genius and is just like so chill. And I like that her and Peter Parker are so different. Like he's like, he just seems to be like straight edge, like awkward, nerdy, and she's just like chill and cool and stuff and like we'll do whatever. Yeah, I mean, I think that I like how silly and how it feels like a kid's movie, but with like violence, obviously. Like it feels like it's more so. I guess it's because like they actually look like teenagers, but like
yeah. No, I dig the Holland Spider-Man movies. I feel like I cried at the first one during when his "Come on, Spider-Man, you got the Spider-Man." He's trying to like lift whatever that collapsed building is. I definitely cried. I think Far From Home is okay, but I like it. Jake Gyllenhaal is definitely my favorite part.
The man no can't holds miss. Barred.
I could write like an essay on like how much I love Far From Home and like how I think it's just, again, it's the whole thing of like the MCU fandom, which I am a fan of the MCU, but I hate
the actual MCU fan. We're Marvel trash, you don't need to worry.
But like the discourse, I mean, it's just what I was going back, like was saying is about like Far From Home. It's like, I think the discourse for that movie is so stupid because it's like some of it's teenage drama, and I'm like, have you guys read a Spider-Man comic book ever? Like, or do you just watch the movies? Because it's like, it's, that's what Spider-Man is, I'm sorry to tell you. Like, it is high school drama, or like any kind of drama. It's not just punching the bad guy, like,
yeah,
it's, and I like that we're getting that. I like that we have the awkwardness and the like, and there's so many great Peter Parker moments in that movie too, like him on the airplane with Happy and like he's just saying like, don't be an Avenger, don't try to be Iron Man, just be you. And like, it's, oh my god, there's so many great moments in that movie. it's so perfect. I love it.
I feel like that is like why so many people like the Raimi movies, right? Is that because they tapped into like the drama. Like these movies are extremely melodramatic.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a soap opera.
Yeah, and like it that is like, from what I understand, like the core of what Spider-Man is, which is why like everyone loves Raimi so much, is because like studio meddling and like mistakes notwithstanding, he really gets Spider-Man. Like he understands what like Spider-Man was supposed to be.
Yeah,
I was actually gonna say the same thing, where it's like I feel like the reason why I like Spider-Man compared to like any other like Marvel, anything Marvel, and why I kind of like WandaVision, and why I was like really invested in Captain America in the beginning, is because I like when like my least favorite thing in Marvel movies where I'm just like, ah, oh, shit, here we go again, like, is when just, like, an alien drops from the sky, and it's like, there's no stakes in this, there's no emotional stakes in this, Adam is smirking at me, and, but I like how, I like when the conflict is, like, personal, like, I like when the stakes are that high, and even though MJ is used as kind of, like, a pawn in these movies, it's like, but you can see why it hurts him. And he has this like draw to obviously like save random people because he's like a good person, but when it's like personal like that, and that's what the villain's like motivations are, I feel like that makes it so much more compelling.
Yeah, it's like going after like the loved, like your loved ones, and you know, like that personal tie, like how will you like sacrifice yourself to save like the love of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sad because then this one, it's just it's that weird balance. There's like a tonal imbalance because the villain's right in like webbing stop us if you can, and then they have her in like a taxi versus like, you know, when Doc Ock captures Aunt May from the the bank or whatever during that sequence that you were talking about, like where they're on the roof. You know, it's like, how do you sort of bring that personal stake into it, and how does that sort of line up? Just on this movie, I do wish that it had a clearer tonal
balance
through line. Yeah, because like, as we were saying, like with the queer reads or whatever, there is definitely so many different angles that you can look at, as you were saying, like different just ins and different reads, but it would be so much more consistent if it just picked one lane to focus on and then sort of like developed its themes through that.
I'm telling you, the Harry Peter stuff like was by far the stuff that I was the most interested in, not just because I knew that that was probably going to be the read for the podcast, but I truly do think that they have like the most varied and interesting relationship in terms of like how high school friendships evolve, and like, you know, there's a little bit of like interesting talks with the class divide when you look at like
how they've
grown apart in the second movie with like Harry literally running his father's
company
and Peter not being able to hold down a pizza delivery job, and like how their relationship exists outside of that. And I mean, it's a good revenge arc. I like that they end up making up and like that they team up in the final fight. That was really cathartic. I was happy. Okay, it's been three movies
that
of them
nice.
Just like hating each other a little bit. Oh, and I appreciate it. Also, they're
so fun when he arrives on a snowboard and he's like,
I'm here
to save the day, kids.
Few minutes would
get epic.
A few minutes earlier would have been nice. What can you do?
All right, it's good. Like, that's cute, witty banter between the two of them at the end.
Yes. I think they have like great just sort of like friend. Ship, I don't know, on screen like chemistry, that when they are fighting in the penthouse, mm-hmm. when right before Peter asks him to come help, I protected you in high school, now I'm gonna kick your little ass. Like, that's like that's the best sort of like, I feel like they broke free of kind of like the script and like the constraints of mm-hmm. what's supposed to be happening in that moment. Like, it feels really organic.
Yes. That's the best, my favorite, and that's my favorite sequence in the whole movie, is just where he goes,
yeah, that's my favorite part too. Like, I mean, and again, that's because it's the through line of all three movies too, so you genuinely feel the drama building up to that moment.
Yeah.
And as cheesy as it may be, and as funny as those lines may be, when I was like 10 years old sitting in the theater for this movie, I felt it.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I remember like when Harry dies at the end, like I remember, like, I don't want to say that was the first time I cried in a movie, but like, it really impacted me, because like, again, I was so devoid of like spoilers or like theories when I was a kid.
Right.
And so when I didn't really know that like characters that I like could die in movies. Mm. And so when Harry died, and I, like a 10-year-old me was like watching that, I was like, I felt like a part of my like investment, like just like, it just died too. Like, I was crushed by it.
Yeah.
You know, for all these movies get criticism for, it's also important to remember, like, this was hugely impactful for, like, so many children at this age.
Absolutely.
Like, this was such a milestone for like, because, like, if you didn't have these movies, you wouldn't have the MCU today, you wouldn't have, like, any of that stuff. So, mm-hmm. I think this was, like, a real, like, trailblazer as far as all that stuff goes.
They were blueprint. Yeah. Is it fair to say that these were, like, the first modern superhero movies to like actually function as a success?
It's like that you have X-Men and Spider-Man are like the two that
X-Men.
Really like redefined sort of everything
superhero movie as we know it today.
And then like Nolan comes in and does his thing, which then obviously like shifts, you know, for the twisted version of like superheroes that we get.
I just think it's really interesting to look at like superhero evolutions, particularly like starting with this mm-hmm. trilogy, because it is something that like our generation has been able to experience from like the outset. Like, we were alive and old enough to watch movies when this was starting, and like now we're adults and we're seeing how the genre has evolved when mm-hmm. like before we were alive it didn't really exist in the same way. So I think that that is, and of course like it's so mega popular that like you're going to be able to get every available take on the subject, but I think that that is why like we cover a lot of superhero and superhero adjacent movies on this podcast, like because it's so relevant to like, it's on a parallel with our journey as people growing up.
Totally. I mean, yeah, this like totally was like a touchstone, as you were saying, for me. And it's, I feel like this movie gets re-referenced so much within modern discourse of like what people get nervous about with sequel films, because these were like, so, I mean, like, while Batman Returns, you know, was like a sequel for Batman, it was such a different time then. And so this was really like the trilogy of like big superhero movies, like in our modern cultural like conversation. And so when this movie fails, everyone looks at this as like what not to do. And so I feel like consistently with the like Marvel films or any film, like people are like, if more than one supervillain gets introduced, it's this movie that we go back to talk about. Like this is obviously the going point of like what people are nervous about films doing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is like a controversial take, but sorry for the Marvel fans.
No, you're good.
But I feel like this is one of the last times that you really felt, and like maybe the only time, I don't know, that you really felt like the presence of a director in a Marvel movie, like something like different. Especially because when we were talking about the blocking before, the fact that like that, I don't know if you guys saw it, but that video went viral about how they like basically like animate out like all the fights before the movie is made.
Yeah, like the previs.
Yeah, and like the director Lucrecia Martel for some reason was like approached to direct a Marvel movie, and like her style is completely not like aligned with anything Marvel
does. That article
does.
Is actually really interesting.
It's like, really good because she basically like just like exposes like their style of how they make their movies, and she was like, they only hire directors to really direct like the dialogue and like the non-action scenes. And I think that that is like one of the biggest issues, because like the main reason why I love like big blockbusters and stuff is like the blocking of the fight scenes. Like I was recently listening to your guys's episode on Atomic Blonde, and even though I didn't necessarily like the movie when it came out, and your episode made me want to revisit it actually, so I'm
I'm so proud.
Like the choreography of like something like that, or like John Wick, or like Mission Impossible, is like it feels more realistic and it's more stylish, and it's not just like flying around mush gray.
It's a physicality.
It's like actual like choreography. It's
absolutely
even
the stuff in the MCU that was supposed to be quote-unquote tactical, like I think I mentioned Winter Soldier earlier, is still like not really like sequenced the way that you would expect it to be sequenced by a director. And I do think it's because it's like very studio controlled and very like mandated, like, well, we need like these five action set pieces for like the trailer and for the marketing, so like that's what you're gonna get in the movie, and we'll like make it interesting. Right, I mean,
things to fit into the box.
Yeah, the modern directors that are the best at working within the Marvel and superhero studio system are the ones that like can play nice with the studio and still get like their distinctive voices in, because they understand how the studio works and like they are interested in working within that studio model but still have like their own voice. And I feel like that is a subsection that is like not that many people, very few and far between. I feel like Taika Waititi and Rian Johnson are the two people that I always cite, where it's like you can feel them as directors, but they also deeply understand what it's like to answer to the studio. And are like ready to answer to the studio, which is why studios like them, because they play nice.
Right, right.
I mean, if that's like the niche that you are in, that's amazing. And I'm really excited to see like super indie directors like Chloe Zhao's Eternals, like what that looks like.
Like, is it going to be like Nomadland, like a very quiet, introspective journey through space and time? Like, I would love that.
Nia DaCosta's Captain Marvel too. Like, it's these really like hella indie directors like getting launched straight to the top that don't necessarily have like blockbuster sensibilities, but have like a lot of like dialogue and character and, you know, sense of place and time, auteur sensibilities. And like, I'm just interested to see like how that differs from someone like Taika or Ryan, or I would say Sam Raimi, who like, even though he fought with the studio, understands like what a studio needs and understands like what a huge blockbuster audience is responding to. Not that these like indie people don't, but you know what I mean. And I think the Russos are like their entirely like whole brand of type of director. I like don't even include them in that.
That's because I saw their latest movie Cherry the other day.
Oh, you saw it?
Oh, you saw it? It's out.
I'm not sure if it's embargoed, so I don't know if I can fully
no,
talk about it.
No
but,
problem.
No worries.
But I just want to say, if this can sway either way for what my opinion is on the movie, it made me more convinced that I'm more impressed by like Marvel's committee than them as directors, because there are moments in Cherry where I was like, this feels like a student film. It does not feel like a actual movie. Like it does not, but it just happens to have Tom Holland in it. Mm-hmm. And it just blows my mind. Like, yeah, the people that directed this also made the highest grossing movie of all time. Like,
yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah. And it makes me like, it. Then that like in retrospect, like thinking back to Endgame, I'm like, the Russos didn't direct that movie. Kevin Feige directed that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the producers of Marvel directed that movie. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Marvel stan. I will always probably love those movies. But
yeah.
And I'm not even like, it's not a good thing. It doesn't necessarily dampen my love either. But it's definitely concerning for the artistry, because I mean, Kira brought up Mission Impossible, but like, I think the last Mission Impossible movie was like maybe the last time that I really felt a director's presence in an action movie.
I thought Fallout. For a second you were going to be like, the last Mission Impossible Fallout. Movie was like not good.
We gotta talk right now. Thomas Cruise.
Absolutely a masterpiece.
It's so absolutely great. Insane that it exists. It's the best. But
I mean, the trailer is one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Actually is one of the greatest trailers.
When he reloads his arms, let's go.
Okay. Yeah. But
the movie's even better. Like, how so? Like, right. How is the movie even better than that already perfect trailer?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what you said about like the producers directing the movie, it's like, that's like the main, not to like bring up the Marvel discourse that is plaguing Twitter every single day, but I think that's like the big, and everyone knows I'm a Disney show.
Yeah, you have a giant check behind you for $1 million. It's interesting.
Oh my God. Oh, I wish.
Oh boy.
Disney should be paying me for the amount that I talk about them. But that's something that really does scare me about like movies and like franchises that I really love, because it's interesting where you see where Sam Raimi came from. And when you watch like Evil Dead, and I recently saw Evil Dead for the first time, and I was like, this literally feels like a lesson in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
On like no yeah. budget. Watching it, I was like, I can see where each light is, and it's not even in like a bad way. I'm like, I learned more from watching this than I did from like film school. Like,
oh my God. Yeah. Oh
and
my God, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like he was working without the input of a studio, really. He did it all on his own, and it's like he was able to hold this huge franchise, and now it's like basically like the brand's directing the movie. And that's something that like obviously with like Rise of Skywalker and stuff, like it's just like everything in the past few years has just felt so like the same. And yes. That's something that specifically scares me, because I am a massive Indiana Jones stan. That's like my franchise my whole life.
Let's
love
go.
That.
Now that Spielberg is gone, George Lucas is like just off chilling somewhere, anywhere, like just chilling. I'm like, oh, it's going to look like an
I'm
Avengers
so nervous.
Movie.
I'm
yeah.
so
I'm
scared.
So nervous to see what a new Indiana Jones is going to look like, because yeah. it's such...
I know it's
they're perfect movies,
and it's so distinctive. I mean, that's what started this whole discussion in the first place, is like the Raimi Spider-Man trilogy feels like Raimi's Spider-Man. Like there's a reason he's so associated mm-hmm. with these movies. Who even directed The Amazing Spider-Man?
Mark Webb.
Right, because his last name is Webb, and it's hilarious. Yes,
such a perfect last name for the director.
Do you think that he got the job because his last name was Webb?
They're like, yeah, you'll do.
Like 90% of why.
Like in the pitch, he goes, my name is Mark. And then in big letters, Webb.
End of pitch. Yeah.
It's like that story where they were pitching like the Aliens sequel. Yeah. And it's like Aliens $. Yeah. You're like, oh.
You have no idea how frequently we think about that story.
Spider-Man 3, are there any sequences or anything that we might have missed that you feel like, because we've yes. jumped around a lot, but with this movie, is there anything that jumps out to you like in a good or bad sense that you want to like touch upon,
anything that we missed?
I will, because like I again, this is probably definitely the worst of the three movies, but I think weirdly enough JJ gets the best of the like material out of all his three movies here. Like all of his sequences here are like super funny. And he is the one constant throughout this entire trilogy. I stand by saying J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson is like the most perfect comic casting. Move aside Hugh Jackman, like all those guys. Like
Wolverine found dead in a ditch.
Exactly, found dead in Miami.
Wolverine found slandered buried by the Daily Bugle. Oh, I'm sorry, found libeled by the Daily Bugle.
Yeah, and I mean, I love him in this. Like, in, like, you already brought it up, but, like, the pill scene is hilarious, and just, like, I love when he's, like, he wants a job, and he wants to sell me pictures. Does anyone know what I want? I do. Get out. Like, it's perfect. It's so good.
As somebody who used to live in the city, one thing that I was thinking about when we were talking about the video games, like, the idea of it being open world, is that the geography in these movies are really interesting. And I like the idea that it feels like a real city, as opposed to like in the Avengers, where it's like, let me just CGI this big building in the middle of where they all just like hang out. And I love the scenes of them like walking down the street, and it does have like a distinctly New York feel, which I feel like the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies kind of capture too. But another thing, I'm like, for New Yorkers, these people spend so much time in Times Square. Like, it's just, really funny how they'll just stand. And, like, I don't know how other people feel about that, but maybe it's just because it's, like, New York. But I'm like, they just really just stand in the middle of Times Square, like, they for love leisure.
Oh, yeah.
For leisure.
I mean, if we're going to talk about New York in these movies, I mean, they have some of the best New York moments where, like, they throw stuff at Goblin.
You mess like, with you, one of you, us. You mess right with all of us.
The whole train. You can't go through me. Just, like, all of the New York in it is just, like, chef's kiss. Like, the city coming together to fight against a villain for the hero.
I wish there was more city stuff in the third one. Because right, you have that stupid British reporter who I hate so much. She is horrible. She, like, literally took me out of the movie. Maybe that's a little harsh, but like, oh my god. But
no,
I was like,
her neck.
I was like, where is the New York sensibility? Mm-hmm. Like, why do we have this posh British reporter right on, like, for the final action sequence? Like,
I want like a janitor.
Where are my local guys?
Out, right, a trash guy. He's like, hey, you fuck. Yeah. Right, just like in a big Italian. Like, I miss those guys.
Yeah.
I think I love like the landlord too. Like,
oh my god,
he's very New York.
Him and Ursula. We have to stand two queens and kings. They are the best in those in 2 and 3. He's always just like, rent? Where's the rent? I and love him.
They'll also bake him cookies.
Yeah, my heart, just like when he's like, oh, he's a good kid. Something must be going on. I'm like, finally. Uh-huh. Finally someone like...
A good character beat.
Yeah.
Oh They're my cuties. God, I can't believe we almost didn't talk about him. The two of them are life-changing, which he offers him, like, the cake and cookies or whatever and the milk, and he's just, like, happy for a moment. You're like, oh, this is beautiful.
They're cute. Good character stuff.
You know what? He should have dated her. She had more agency than MJ sometimes.
Actually, seriously.
It's honestly so pure because, like, in the second movie, she has, like, a crush on him, you can tell.
Oh, definitely.
In the third movie, she's, like, giving him relationship advice of, like, how to talk to MJ after, like, the breakup.
She's so supportive.
Yeah, she ships MJ.
Yes, I love... Oh, my God. Yeah, those two characters, like Mr. Ditkovich and Ursula, like just perfect. Like, and again, that's one upside to the meme culture is they have not let the Rent meme die because it should not die because it's perfect.
It was great. That was a great run.
Rent. Okay.
I was just going to ask, how much does this make?
All right. So I just want to give everyone a super quick overview of how the trilogy did as a whole. So original Spider-Man 2002, Spider-Man 2 2004, Spider-Man 3 2007. Now, of the three, Spider-Man 3 is the one that made the most money worldwide for the time, and also the one that, but not the one that made the most domestically for the time. So like worldwide, we're talking like Spider-Man 3 wins by a mile. I think this is because like cinema is starting to get more global and like the world loves Spider-Man at this point. Like everyone is very like hotly anticipated, yes. But Spider-Man 1 from 2002 blew the shit out of the water in terms of like actual domestic box office and inflated domestic box office. So
how
like if all three of these came out in 2020, Spider-Man would make inflated adjusted domestically $636 million domestic. Whereas Spider-Man 3 like inflated would only make $448 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
People are a little tired on the old Spidey.
Well, I think it's so crazy that Spider-Man, the original, was like such I mean, it's not that surprising, but it was such a mega hit. Like, it literally did not dip for 5 weeks. It dipped like 30% for weeks. It's absolutely crazy.
I mean, he's like, it's like, you know, the in the pantheon of superheroes, it's like him, Superman, Batman are like the big three, you know, that like draw in. I mean, not even Superman, honestly. So like, pretty much just like Spider-Man and Batman are like the ones that make the most money, like selling toys, clothes, everything like that. So
yeah, but as far as this movie, I mean, it opened amazingly. It opened number one to $151 million. That's not inflated. That is like 2007 money. And then, you know, it hung on for a while. It did very well. You know, these are superhero blockbusters. They did great. These are the epitome of four quadrant movies. And yeah, I mean, like, you love to see it. They've just like continued to remain like in the cultural lexicon. As we said, the meme well is just like bottomless when it comes to these things. And yeah, they're iconic.
Yeah, it's a great trilogy. We love.
Yeah, I found it interesting that like in all the like the Batman reboots and like especially like the latest Superman like interpretation, like there's like the studio always wants to like make it darker and like make it grittier. But I feel like Spider-Man has just been the constant, like even after he's rebooted, they don't change him too much.
No.
Like, he's the, and that's like, that, I think that's the universal appeal that they, that he never has to be reinvented. He is just so openly welcomed by audiences. Right. And it kind of just shows in the progression of the box office. Like, I think that's really fascinating.
And they don't need to show you his parent, Uncle Ben being killed again. Like, we need to see Martha being shot in the aisle or like the hall again, whatever.
The alley. Yeah.
Those pearls have to be thrown.
Yep, we get the idea. All right.
One of my favorite Tumblr posts is if I have to see, like, whenever the franchise is rebooted, if I have to see Uncle Ben die again, I'm just going to shoot him myself.
Yeah.
I mean, not wrong.
I think they made a very good decision in the Tom Holland movies to just skip that whole origin story business. Okay.
Should we go around and give our personals?
Let's speed round. Personal and QQs. Okay. I'll keep this very brief. Personally, maybe I was too harsh on this movie, but I'm just going to stick with it. I gave this movie 2.5 stars. You know, it has some good parts, it has a lot of bad parts, but you know what, I had a fun time watching the trilogy and I'm glad that I have been exposed to them. On the queer quadrant, I mean, I'm gonna give this like 2 stars.
Hey, that's better than Home Alone.
It's true. We really like set the bar so low that we can never, like, everything that we cover now is gonna seem super reasonable, and we definitely did that on purpose.
Great.
So great. Yeah, 2 stars. I mean, look, I love Harry and Peter. I definitely see the Eddie Peter thing. I think your reading of the symbiote business was honestly like Pulitzer worthy. And yeah, you know, it's the same sort of accidental homoeroticism that we see in a lot of these movies, but I think it's important to keep pointing them out so that we can really prove how deeply rooted it is. Jordan?
I concur. 3.5 for me, because I think
on the personal,
yeah, I think it's like, I mean, 2 is a 5-star and a heart, absolutely, but this is like, for all the flaws, I also see the positives, and it's especially on this rewatch, I hadn't seen it in so long, and it's sort of, I yearned for a day to watch something like this again that is going so clearly for something. Like, no matter what, Raimi's trying to do something, and he has such a clear style, and I really just do miss that, and I miss sort of just the fun that these movies sort of brought to my life. And maybe it's nostalgic, maybe it's not, I don't know, I just always have a fun time. And even though Sandman is just a big gloopy mess and I want to flush him down the toilet, I still just do enjoy the movie. On the queer quadrant, I'll go 2.5, and I just think that there's just, as we were saying, we've kind of talked about it, but just like the Eddie Brock, I want to be you, I want to be with you, the whole James Franco of it all is just a lot of big business. And I just think if you look at what sort of the symbiote represents and sort of its like sexlessness and sort of how it like deconstructs like heteronormativity, both in the comics and sometimes on screen, I just think is interesting. And I mean, bad emo Peter is just so accepted in the cultural norm as like gay, gay Peter, that I think it's just like impossible to really like overlook that, because I mean, just as a kid, it was just the constant go-to joke and just sort of how people conversated about it. So
that's so crazy. I missed that whole
that's wild thing. Yeah, I mean, like, every single guy in my school was just like, yeah, Peter's gay, and that I'm like, oh,
yeah,
all right,
that makes sense. It makes sense that that would be the takeaway.
How about you?
Yes,
you
Kira, both? Adam.
I would say personally, 3 stars just for the nostalgia of the whole thing, and I think just in the context of how I feel about Marvel now, I can't not project that onto it. And then I'd say like a 3 for the queer quadrant. It really does interest me, and like I think that I would definitely have to like study it more, because it really fascinates me, like how Tobey Maguire's performance is, and like how it literally feels like he's performing in all his relationships, all the like heterosexual relationships. Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting to me. But yeah, I don't know.
No, love that. Totally. That's
no,
great.
That's yeah. I feel like that's a great read, because it is like very like perform. And you know, I feel like no matter what, like being a superhero is very a performative thing, and like there's a queerness to it. Like you're putting on a mask, and like it's what people like see you on the outside versus the inside. Like no matter what, there's like a queer read to that.
You don't want your secret to get out. Right. All of that good stuff. Anyway,
yeah, your secret identity.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, I would say personally a 3 for the film. It was interesting rewatching it, because I remember everything so vividly as I was rewatching it. And I've kind of had a weird relationship with this movie. Like, I loved it when I was a kid, and then I went through the phase where I was like, this movie's bad. And then I like got to my 20s, and now I'm like, no, it's kind of good. Like, it's not a great movie, but I think it holds up better than people give it credit for. And mm-hmm. It's an interesting time like capsule of like the kind of superhero movies we just don't make anymore. As for the queer quadrant, I gotta say, I was at a 2 originally, but I think Jordan boosted it up to a 2.5 for the symbiote thing, because you're so right. Like, cause I that's why I love the symbiote in the comics, is because he is, or it is so like this asexual or like kind of thing. Like it doesn't like project anything. Like it's just, it's so innately inhuman. It brings out like whatever your true qualities are, good or bad. And then your read on it was just really fascinating, so it boosted up to a 2.5 for me.
Yay.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that. And everything we talked about Harry and Peter too, just icing on the cake.
Oh my god. Yeah,
this just in, symbiote ended gender worldwide.
Oh, absolutely. Tom Hardy as Venom changed the game.
That movie is great. We'll cover
it. I cannot, just so we're all aware, I cannot wait till there's some carnage on our screen.
There's gonna be carnage.
There's gonna, let there be carnage.
Director Andy Serkis, baby.
Oh boy.
We're not ready.
Do you think he's gonna be in it?
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, absolutely. Like little cameos here and there. Or he'll play like some weird robot thing.
Yeah.
All right. Jordan, do you want to guess the Letterboxd rating?
I would love to.
Kira, Adam, feel free to throw in a guess if you would like to. Jordan, you wanna?
First, so if it was Spider-Man 2, I would be like 4.4. Spider-Man 3. It's going to be in the 2s. I'm between a 2.5 and a 2.9. I'll split the difference. 2.7.
Okay.
You guys?
2.8, just because there's a lot of Raimi stands.
I was thinking that too. I was thinking in terms of like people our age that are kind of looking back, trying to reclaim it, or like people that are like the meme letterbox stands.
Yeah.
I would say probably like a 2.9.
One of you is correct. Congratulations to Jordan. It's a 2.7. Unfortunately,
go
on the lower end of the spectrum.
I mean, I just there's no way that thing was cracking above 3. So.
Yeah, no way. It's left a memorable legacy, if not an entirely positive one. So, you know, and I really did enjoy watching
you've,
it.
You've seen the trilogy
I
now,
did
baby.
It.
Have you seen the Amazing Spider-Mans?
Yes.
Okay.
But like I don't really remember them. I think I was old enough where I would like go see them in theaters, but I didn't go see these in theaters.
Right.
Because as you know,
of course,
I never went anywhere.
Right. And you also notably, as everyone knows, you haven't seen any movies.
Correct.
So, right.
We all know this.
Yes.
Kira, Adam, thank you so much for being here.
It was so much fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had a blast.
I'm so glad. And I'm so glad that we had some resident Zillennial experts to talk about this extremely Zillennial movie, because like cuss movies are weird as hell. And it is so great that you like literally cover such a specific subset of movies that like I feel like are often forgotten. And it is a joy to figure out which horrible childhood memory you're going to pull out really, every week.
Your podcast is awful in the sense that I have to face so much childhood trauma of movies that I have repressed so deeply.
Yes, absolutely.
It just brings out these very dark memories that I'm like, oh no, I forgot about this.
Well, that's our goal.
It's great. I mean, it's amazing. It's good. Amazing. It's an amazing podcast. Terrible for my mental health.
But no, seriously, everyone should listen to Zillennial Canon. And if they want Absolutely. To do that, where can they find both the podcast and also you guys?
So we're streaming on basically all streaming services, and it's called the Zillennial Canon. I always forget about the. We should have dropped the. It's cleaner. On Twitter at Zillennial Canon, we post a lot of dumb stuff and memes. And also on Instagram, we post some memes. You can find me personally at Garlic Emoji on Twitter.
Incredible.
And Adam.
I love it.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well at Adam_NotSandler. And yeah.
All the guests that we've had on.
Wait, no, go ahead. What were you saying?
She was trying to plug my other podcast for me. But honestly, at this point, you're either with it or you're not. Like it's not even a real podcast. It's just it's
a vibe.
It's an abstract concept.
Nothing but vibes.
Yeah.
It's like a symbiote, you know? Every guest that we've had on has such a great Twitter handle, and ours are so boring. But we're also on Twitter. I'm at Brooke V. Solomon.
At Jordan H. Gus.
And we are together at Queer Quadrant. You can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, subscribe, leave us a review, tell us your thoughts on this fucking bonkers ass movie. It's a great time.
Brooke.
Yes.
We've webbed up our enemies in this one, and we've taken to the sky. We're flying through. We're shooting a web. What is our web landing on next week?
Dude, we're literally just covering another superhero movie next week because the timing worked out perfectly. And so here we are. We're just gonna in fucking superhero land next week. We're doing Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman. To coincide with the release.
Hashtag, we're releasing the Snyder Cut.
Yes, we will be releasing a new movie Sunday bonus ep, as we sometimes do, on the 4-hour Snyder Cut on HBO Max. I think it is important to note that I have never seen Justice League, Snyder Cut, or otherwise, so mm-hmm. I am going in totally cold. I've also never seen Batman v Superman.
This is incredible.
So, it's going to be...
Have you seen Man of Steel?
Yes.
Oh, darn.
I don't remember much, though. So it's going to be a really interesting time, and I might kill you.
I'm very excited.
suggesting that we do this.
It's going to be a great time.
So tune in.
You'll be the Superman to my Batman.
Yes, we're going to just punch the shit out of each
Martha!
Other.
Martha!
Martha Box.
Yes.
So tune in next week for that 2 episodes for The Price of One.
Woo.
Enjoy that. Okay, great. Jordan.
And, as always, guys, pizza time.